Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Ann Vandersteel, and this is the Zelenko Report, where truth and God are taking down the tyranny of our time. Tonight, we have a very action-packed show. It's going to be quick-moving. Adam Steen, he's running for Wisconsin's 63rd as an assemblyman. He's trying to run as a write-in candidate. Trump endorsed. We're going to hear from him at the top of the show. Mark Mix with the National Right to Work Committee also joins us to talk about his fight for your right to work up against the unions and why you should vote for the GOP. And of course, we're now finalizing the show on a continuation in our series on the Erickson Report, how that global internet and nest of cables and wires is behind the corporate public-private construct that is destroying not only this country, but the rest of the countries around the world. Investigative journalist Michael Corey has it all. I'm Ann Vandersteel. You are live here on Brighteon.tv with replays at 9 p.m. across multiple channels, including Rumble, CloudHub, Getter, Red Voice Media, and Frank Speech TV. Be right back after this quick commercial break.
It just continues to get more and more maddening, more and more frustrating, which ignites the flame of the fire for this show to continue the fight. And Christopher Key is doing the same thing. This organization, Vaccine Police, I am proud to continue to support them, and I hope that you will too. Go to vaccine-police.com. He video documents everything as he's in the face of these hospital administrators that are killing your community members, your friends, your family, your relatives, in the face of these petty tyrants on school boards, in the face of the, you know what he's doing? He's putting up billboards in major metropolitan areas, waking people up that otherwise would have no idea that these shots are dangerous and in many cases deadly. That information that Karen Kingston just brought us, that's the type of stuff that Christopher Key is sharing with the world. Please go support this organization. Go to vaccine-police.com. Look at the video documentation of everything this guy is doing. It's amazing. I applaud his efforts. He's a modern day hero. There will be a statue of Christopher Key somewhere when this whole thing is over and we win this war. Please support that organization. Go to vaccine-police.com. Again, vaccine-police.com.
Here we grow again. Brighteon is expanding with our new daily live stream in Espanol. Anchored by hosts like Yor Hernandez, a former Telemundo and Fox reporter, Brighteon TV in Espanol is bringing over a dozen new hosts and shows to the Spanish speakers of the world who are seeking out the truth on everything. To watch, go to Brighteon.com, click on the Espanol live stream, and prepare to hear the truth in a whole new language. Brighteon TV in Espanol. Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one.
And welcome back to the Zelenko Report. Up first on deck, Adam Steen, running for assemblyman in Wisconsin's 63rd district. He's been endorsed by President Trump, did not make it through the primary. Oddly enough, there was a 260 vote count that came flying in at the very last hour, but he is persevering. Adam, welcome back to the Zelenko Report here. Want to get a quick update because you are running in a local race, and it's unusual for a local candidate to get national attention, particularly from such a resounding source like President Trump. What is the update, and how is the campaign looking so far?
The campaign is absolutely looking amazing, seriously, and we have folks that are knocking on doors, putting up signs, passing out flyers, trying to get the message out, because the beauty of a write-in campaign in the state of Wisconsin is that we will have a hand count on November the 8th. It is an absolute miracle that I've been preaching to get a in-person, on paper, hand count, one-day election process. And now, after losing the primary, allegedly by 260 votes, that we can have a hand count. So it's going amazing.
Well, you might be the only person who actually gets an accurate count of the election, because we know Brazil now was actually stolen using the hammer and scorecard that broke late last night, thanks to Mary Fanning and others over at the American Report. So, but I want to better understand this, because Robin Voss, who's the current Speaker of the House in Wisconsin, for President Trump to step in this race, there is a reason why your candidacy and your win must happen in Wisconsin. What does that mean for 2024?
So if you look nationally at this race, there's 6,438 other assembly races going on in the country right now. We are looking at the direction of the state of Wisconsin, and once Wisconsin falls for the elections process, the rest of the country will fall. And why? What I mean by that is we will have free and fair elections in the state of Wisconsin when I get elected to this position. He has done, Robin Voss has done everything possible to stop and hinder any movement forward when it comes to solving the problems that we found in our elections. You and I can spend hours going through what we've seen, but he wants to do absolutely nothing. He passed 17 bills that all got vetoed by our governor in order to say that he's going to defend election integrity, but he has absolutely no intention of fixing the problems that we found in our election. A quick side note, in Milwaukee, the assistant election commission officer was just fired from her job because she sent three military ballots to Janelle Branchon, the chairman of the Elections Commission in the Assembly, their committee. She was just fired for sending her three military ballots that were fraudulently created. So we have such vulnerabilities in our state, and where is my opponent? Silent, absolutely silent when it comes to these issues.
Yeah, you know, they're coming out of the woodworks. Senator Sonny Borelli from Arizona sent me a report of the shenanigans going on in Arizona. Are you all using similar tactics that, say, Clean Elections USA, Team USA run by Jeffrey Prather, where they're actually doing ballot watch boxes, parties, and so forth to make sure that this kind of shenanigans doesn't happen?
That is so important that you asked me that question. So we have a goal of getting 150 people. We're still short of our goal to come into Racine County from across the state and watch the hand count going on, because it is so critical that we as citizens step up and follow this process, right? Because if we don't take them into account and hold them accountable, there's never going to be the proper process followed without accountability.
You're absolutely right. Civic duty is tantamount to making sure that we can restore this republic, for which I say we have lost at this current time based on the previous results of 2020 and quite possibly many elections before that. If you are victorious, what is going to be your first order of duty, Adam?
The first thing that we need to do when I get into office on January 3rd and get seated is we have to get rid of the Wisconsin Election Commission. And in that bill, when we get rid of the Wisconsin Election Commission, we are going to wipe the voter rolls at the same time. We have to have free and fair elections. Every issue that we talk about is subpar to the election issue, because once we can't elect and don't have a constitutional republic, we are no longer a free country any longer.
You're right, Adam. Adam, appreciate you stopping by, giving us this important update. Folks, you can follow him at steenforcongress.com, S-T-E-E-N-F-O-R, congress.com. Adam, we will continue to monitor your progress, and we look forward to getting positive results from you on Tuesday night. Thank you for stopping by.
Thanks so much. I'm going to update the website for you. It's steenforus.com,
S-T-E-E-N-F-O-R-U-S.com. Got it. Sorry about that.
Volunteer. It is just fine. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Ann.
You're no problem. Okay, up next, we have a gentleman, Mark Mix. He is the president of the National Right to Work Committee, which is a 2.8 million member public policy organization. He also serves as the president of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Fund Foundation. He's actually out working for the people, the real people who want to be working and who have been, shall we say, dishonorably treated by their unions. Mark Mix joins me now to talk about why it's important to vote GOP. Mark, welcome to the Zelenko Report.
Hey, Ann, thanks for the opportunity, and it's a good time to be on. There's a lot at stake, as Adam just mentioned, and as you've been articulating, a lot at stake here in the United States of America, including individual freedom in the American workplace, where actually a lot of special interests play a lot of games and have a lot of power. So glad to have an opportunity to talk about it.
So let's talk about some of the cases that you're working on right now that stand out as the most egregious cases that you've, you know, had to go in and step in and defend the right to the, for the workers who are being strong-armed by unions. And why does that matter?
Yeah, at our Legal Defense Foundation, we have 21 staff lawyers that do nothing but help employees whose rights have been violated by compulsory unionism, forced unionism arrangements that unfortunately are supported by federal law and state law in some instances. We have a case right now in Pennsylvania on behalf of workers who have voted twice to reject a contract proposal that the union proposed, and yet the union basically unilaterally imposed that contract on the workers that voted twice to reject it. I mean, that's a case we've got going. We've got a case on behalf of lifeguards in California who are forced to formally join a private organization in order to work for the state of California, violating somewhat 50 years of legal precedents that we've established through our litigation program. At any given time, we have about 200 to 250 cases pending on behalf of employees, and we're providing that legal service for free. We've been to the U.S. Supreme Court 18 times on behalf of individual workers. We won. Our most recent victory was back in 2018, giving right-to-work protections for every government employee in America, saying if you're a government employee, you can't be forced to pay dues or fees to a union in order to work for your government. So a big fight we're winning, but we need more help, and we need more help from a legislative standpoint as opposed to judicial standpoint. And that's what we're trying to do in the next 6 days.
Well, the judicial standpoint has, I think, failed our country on so many different levels. But I want to go back to the mandates, the, you know, the vaccine mandates. Talk to us a little bit about the unions and their abuse of their workers with forced vaccinations in order to maintain dues and benefits from the unions.
Yeah. Well, this, you know, it's kind of interesting because it positions very well to this idea that, Ann, I can force you to pay me in order to have a job. I mean, the idea that forced unionism is part of this, and then the unions come back and say, well, this mandate issue, they weren't necessarily opposed to or in favor of it. What they said was, look, we got to negotiate over it. We got to reopen these contracts, and we got to ask for certain things. And if you go to California and ask what the government unions were trying to ask for, the teachers union specifically, in order to say, yeah, we'll talk about mandates for teachers, but you got to give Medicaid for all, and you got to have, you know, you got to eliminate all these radical ideas using their power and their position that was granted by government to basically make these demands on the American people, when ultimately, you know, they talk about choice, but yet they force mandates and they force unionization on workers. But somehow, you know, that's wrong when it belays their gores their ox, if you will.
So you feel strongly that voting GOP will support the worker over the union, should we say, mafia strong arm tactics?
Well, step one is to encourage people to look at the Republican agenda when it comes to it. But more importantly than that, Ann, holding Republicans accountable after the fact is the most important part of this. Because, look, the unions support Democrats somewhere between 95 and 99.9% of all their money goes to one party. We know who that is. So the Republicans on one hand say, well, look, they're not supporting me, so I need to do something. But once they get in power, then the biggest job we have is holding them accountable in this Democratic Republic. I mean, we loan our power to workers, whether it be Democrat or Republican. And I, you know, I'm not a partisan guy. I've been doing this for 36 years, and I've been disappointed time and time and time again by the GOP. But here's what we know what's at stake. The Democrats is all in for union power and more power over workers in America. The Republican Party voices and talks about how they'll support individual freedom. The question is, will they do it if we give them power again? And that's where we have to, that's step two of what we have to do after next Tuesday.
Got it. Mark Mix, thank you so much. Where's the best place for folks to find more about your organizations that you're president of and how they can support?
Yeah, they can find us on that amazing internet at www.nrtw.org for their legal rights in the workplace and nrtwc.org for questions about legislation and where their politicians stand on the issue of freedom and forced unionism.
Love it. Mark Mix, thank you so much for the work that you're doing. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks, Ann. Appreciate it.
All right, here is the next story we're going to get into is something that I'm very passionate about because I actually used to work in the telecommunications industry. I was actually worked in the wireless industry years ago, so I know enough to be dangerous about the subject matter. But of course, my journey as an American state national has also led me to learn about the corporate construct and the fraud that has come from the abuse of public-private partnerships. Michael Corey is an investigative journalist who started in the mortgaged backed securities industry in banking. One day he got busy when he was given the opportunity to go through some files. He took a quick sneak peek under the hood of what was happening, and he started to understand the fraud that was being perpetrated by the banking industry. In 1996, the Telecommunications Act under Bill Clinton basically the entire apparatus, which was, you know, to sort of regulate the internet and the broadcasting industry to prevent monopolization, to protect children from harmful content, had the exact opposite effect, as does everything that the federal government ever presents, specifically around the agency area. Well, Michael has assembled an incredible team, and after some serious research over the past year or more, he's been able to tie together the corporate corporate fraud and the public-private, shall we say, agency conspiracy, which has led to crimes against humanity. I'm talking the whole enchilada here, folks. This includes telecom, banking, courts, corporations, ICANN. Remember when Obama gave away the internet? Oh, that's right. And there's a reason why he did it, because the shadow government was given birth. We're going to explain a lot of that at a very high level, and we're going to continue to bring Michael back because these updates are going to become necessarily very important to how we unwind this corporate construct, this fraud that's been perpetrated here, not only on America, but around the world. Welcome back, Michael Corey, to the Zelenko Report. It's great to have you. Oops, we've lost your audio.
We're good.
Okay.
Thank you for having me. I muted myself, but yeah. I appreciate it. And definitely a lot to unpack. So, starting off with the 1996 Telecommunications Act, it made a public-private partnership of literally every telecom, every AT&T, Verizon, the gamut, every single telecommunications company and corporation is connected, right? They're public-private, but they're connected as far as clients and attorney-client privilege is concerned. So
the last time you and I spoke about this, and for those that missed it, I will put in the show notes the actual link to that show, but we were talking about the emergency services, the 911, when you call, you're connected to emergency services. And obviously with the looming election here on the 8th of November, there's been all sorts of conjecture about potentially there's going to be some false flag event. Clearly it looks like the world is going up in flames with the Koreas firing missiles at each other. We've got our 101st Airborne in Ukraine. And again, we're at that 70-year period where it's time to refinance the debt that the entire world is in. So it's wartime, because this is what happens every 70 years when we go bankrupt as a global economy, a world war starts out. So we're in that cycle. I mean, let's be historically accurate with 2020 vision about what's really happening here. Michael, the public-private partnerships, the corporations, and the telecommunications industry specifically has generated a surveillance state. And people need, knowledge is power. So the surveillance apparatus has given global intelligence communities a sneak peek into everything under the hood, and they've used it, weaponized it, and extorted people over it to get to accomplish their agenda. So take us to, the basics of how, who the Erickson, what the Erickson Report stands for, and who are some of the basic players that sort of layer up to create this nest that we're going to try and untangle right now.
Right. So it starts and ends, obviously, with all people from both sides, Republican, Democrat, populations around the world are all involved. But you have 6.5 billion people that are affected by this system. So when Snowden came out with his leaks, a lot of that information pertained to getting those telecoms, specifically immunity. And that was exactly the point, along with also covering up some of the SWIFT transactions that were taking place. So when you go back, I don't like to go too far back because it's a lot to unpack, but we could simply start with Julian Assange, right?
Right.
His WikiLeaks cables, when they were leaked, you had a bevy of Library of Congress, you had Department of Commerce, you had the Air Force, you had Verizon, AT&T, Western Union, that's a major one, all did an embargo and said, the actual U.S. Patent Office sent out letters stating, if you even open any of these documents, we will not only fire you, but we will sue you as well. We will pursue lawsuits, right? So you have to ask yourself, why were these government systems that are all intertwined and interconnected, why were they all working so hard to make sure, still to this day, actually, that not a single WikiLeaks cable gets entered into a court of record, gets entered into the Library of Congress? Today, we've heard so many times, so many people mention Hillary's emails, right? Always talking about Hillary's emails, but for some odd reason, they will not enter any of those WikiLeaks cables, which is just a complete holding up the mirror of what was going on behind the scenes. They won't enter any of that into a court. It all has to do with corporate public-private partnership, because it's not about the people. It's not about what we want. It's about what the corporation desires, and the corporation is always going to desire bottom line, right? What is the monetary value? What am I going to get from this? So I thought it was pretty damning enough, you know, the 911 emergency services being controlled by a corporation that's admitted, their CEO admitted, to funding and bribing and sponsoring ISIS for over 17 years. But you know, this is the thing about this is every time that we try to get this story out there, they control the DNS. They control the underbelly of the internet. And so they can censor, they can put frequency gates, prevent portability. So with that numbers portability contract going over to Ericsson, complete fraud, obviously. The entire process, no national security concerns were looked into, ignored, actually. You had Chinese coders that were actually working, Chinese nationals, working on the code. Literally, this is the code that controls porting our numbers over, which sounds kind of silly because they make it seem like it's just a matter of keeping your phone number, but it's ones and zeros that go into that domain name system. So literally every level, top level, middle, second level, every aspect of it can be tapped into all your devices. And also use your devices as malware and botnets around the world.
Yeah. So I want to give some quick examples of how they're able to move dark money around and tag communications that they're spying on folks with, along with SWIFT transactions, because people are familiar with the SWIFT banking system. Russia was removed from the SWIFT banking system. BRICS nations are now obviously going to their own gold-backed securities, and they're holding the rest of the countries around the world hostage that are on the central banks. This war in Ukraine is about the central bankers maintaining control, and they're losing it, which is why they're going to gin up this world war. But that's another subject. We don't want to dive down the rabbit hole. But explain in technical terms, or as layperson's technical terms, how they use SWIFT banking transactions to move communications and dark money so that we wouldn't know what was going on. The people didn't know how they were being robbed.
Yeah, that's a pretty deep
because
question.
Because we're spending a lot of money in Ukraine right now. Frankly, we've spent enough money on weapons. We could have three off-planet wars with all the weapons that supposedly we've sold to Ukraine. Where they put all this stuff? So I imagine some of these transactions are included in what's happening in Ukraine. So can you explain that?
Yeah, so when it goes back to 2006, around that time, actually, it's pretty funny because not that funny, but interesting. Glenn Simpson wrote an article specifically mentioning SWIFT back in 2005. Another person who is being looked into, investigated by Durham, is Eric Lichblau, who also wrote an article in 2006, 2008. But essentially what they were saying was, hey, the Americans and the NSA are spying on Angela Merkel and, you know, these politicians around the world. This is so terrible, through their terrorist tracking and finance program. So under Bush, right, we were essentially cut off from the treaty agreement between ourselves and Sweden. And of course, Ericsson is a Swedish telecommunications company. So at that time, right, it took away our ability to track those funds through the NSA. Then you had it when Snowden had his leaks in 2013, he did the very same thing. He brought up SWIFT transactions. And so what essentially that enables and allows, if you can cut off any ability to trace and track, and then also completely destroy the database and the NSA, which the CIA has been working very hard and diligently in the background to do for quite some time, then there's no receipts. And if there's no receipts, then you can't have any proof. If there's no oversight, then there's nobody watching, and you know, the prisoners have taken over the prison. But just as it pertains to packets and injecting data, right, you can put any sort of data inside of these packets, right? It's a matter of the devices that are sending it, submitting it, and receiving it. So it's very complex, but to be as brief as I can, the certificates that certify, right, what you're seeing and what you're getting are completely comped and controlled by this corporation in ICANN, which in 2011 donates $255,000 to the Clinton Foundation. Shortly thereafter, Ericsson has a speech, or Bill Clinton has a speech in Hong Kong, China, and donates $750,000 to a speech that he conducts, again, on behalf of the Clinton Foundation. So
right.
You have all these
connections. To the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah, yeah.
Hillary then makes some overtures to Iran, who they're supposedly going to place sanctions on, but instead says, well, Because Ericsson is a foreign company, we're going to let them police themselves. And since we don't really have diplomatic relations with Iran, because they're a country, a state sponsor of terror, we're going to allow Ericsson to police themselves. And don't worry that they just paid my husband $750,000 for speaking for 45 minutes.
Exactly. And you got to think about it from the perspective of there was no central bank at the time, you know. Iran, it's very interesting when you look back at Iran back to 1979 and up, but that's really kind of ground zero. And when you realize that all these sanctions are actually enabling, if you think about it from this end of it, you have MS-13. If you wanted to operate a cabal or if you wanted to operate a gang, you'd need cash, right?
Right.
You're not gonna pay them through. Maybe today you pay them in crypto, but you're not going to, you need cash, right? You need a lot of cash. And you look back to the uranium deal, nuclear deal in Iran, right?
Right.
And
Mike, we've got about 10 seconds left. I don't want to cut you off because we're going to come back after this commercial break. I apologize for having to interrupt you. We're going to come back after this commercial break. I want to start this conversation back up with Obama and the shadow government. We've heard the term, we've heard the phrase. What does it mean? We're here with Michael Corey, investigative journalist on the Ericsson Report. Stick with us here at Zelenko Report on Brighteon TV.
Satellite phones have been wiped out globally because of the supply chain collapse and war in Europe. But a truly amazing new option has emerged, the Bivy Stick, which allows you to send and receive text messages using almost any mobile device without relying on cell towers at all. In a world where war, riots, or a power grid failure can happen literally at any time, the Bivy Stick and its two-way satellite messaging gives you the power to reach loved ones, to send emergency messages, or request a rescue. And to use this device, you do not have to register your name, and you don't need to turn on location services or reveal your geographic location. The battery life is several days in duration, and you can easily recharge it using a small portable power bank. There are only about 20,000 Bivy Sticks that will be available in America this year. Get yours now while they're still available at SAT123.com. That's SAT123.com. SAT123.com. They have put together a really incredible package, emergency backup communication systems, power systems. We've got sat phones, we've got solar panels, and also the big 400-watt solar panel behind us there. And why does this matter? Because, of course, right now we are dealing with massive risk of blackouts. And the power grid is just failing, you know, intermittently. But it's going to get worse because we've also got energy shortages. Think about the lack of coal power, the diesel problems that are happening right now. If you're in the military or the National Guard or Border Patrol, or law enforcement, and you need to be able to function even when the power grid goes down, or maybe you're a first responder, rescue team, firefighter, paramedic, you name it, you need to know about this equipment. So SAT123.com, folks. If you don't want to eat GMOs and pesticides in your storable food, choose organic, lab-tested storable food solutions from the Health Ranger store. We are the only emergency food manufacturer in the world that subjects each of our ingredients to rigorous laboratory testing that covers herbicides, heavy metals, aflatoxins, identity testing, and bacteria tests, including E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold. At healthrangerstore.com, you'll find certified organic, lab-tested, freeze-dried fruits, microalgae superfoods, protein powders, and supplements. We offer emergency first aid colloidal silver products made with Texas rainwater, and our Ranger buckets feature an impressive assortment of organic storable food items professionally vacuum sealed in heavy-duty bags that are stacked in rugged buckets for long-term storage. Check out our preparedness foods, supplements, personal care, and emergency first aid products at healthrangerstore.com.
And welcome back for the second half of the Zelenko Report. I'm joined with investigative journalist Michael Corey. We're having a discussion with the corporate construct, the public-private partnerships, which seemingly sound so innocuous and that's of such benefit to people that live supposedly freely on the planet, what we're finding is, in fact, we are tangled up in a web of corporate communism, corporate slavery, the debt slave model, and they've used telecommunications to create a surveillance state to spy on us, the surveillance industrial complex. Michael Corey, welcome back for the second half of the show. I want to lead off and just remind people, you know, the Durham investigation had everybody's high hopes that we're finally going to get Hillary, we're finally going to get Obama, we're finally going to get justice. And it's been a long, drawn-out affair. And what did we get? We sort of got like a faded star nothing with Danchenko, who got off scot-free, essentially. He was absolved of all of lying to the FBI, et cetera. But I feel like we did learn a lot of things. And one of the names that that comes up that's very instrumental in this discussion is Mark Joffe and Neustar. Give us a little history on who he is and Neustar and where Neustar came from and what Neustar is.
So Rodney Joffe, essentially his history goes back. He's a fraud from the beginning. He used to sell grandfather clocks that would never be delivered to grandmothers and old people. Just spam mail, right? It's kind of almost comical. But somehow this guy gets control of some very important patents. So Neustar is the company that literally runs, if you're like the traffic cop of the internet, right? You type in certain digits and numbers alphanumerically on the keyboard. And so there's got to be a company that, of course, takes that data and takes you to where you're supposed to go. Well, that's Neustar. And so they've been providing that service to Amazon. Publicly, they've at least been saying since 2008, but what I've seen through my investigations is that it's been way sooner than that. And it actually shows that these patents being so all important, interconnected to Huawei, interconnected to, I mean, literally every telecommunications company you think of. And if I list a few, you know, you have Google, Ericsson, Amazon, Verizon, AT&T, Telcordia Technologies is a huge one, Microsoft, Oracle, Akamai, Boeing, Cisco, Dell. So the gambit of companies. And so what I've uncovered digging further into Neustar is that their connections fraudulently taking over the DNS and essentially something that the public paid for, taxpayers paid for, they've completely monopolized and taken over. And the problem with that is they provide services, again, for 6.5 billion people around the world. And their subsidiary New Level actually provides a second level domain and top level domain for Taiwan and China. So it covers all of these things. And this one patent, I'm just so surprised I'm not surprised because they're able to censor everything and anything that we've tried to put out. But these patents are so impactful because they're assigned to Raytheon, they're assigned to Bank of America, Verizon. And then you have all these characters switching over. The CEO, Hans Vestberg, of Ericsson leaves Ericsson just shortly after this the scandal not starts to unfold, because it never did start to unfold. The Justice Department was investigating Ericsson since 2013, the SEC since 2009, and knew and said, hey, you guys are doing business in terrorist, you know, funded states. You need to account for this. You can't just do this and not put this in your filings. Well, of course, because there are a majority of good people in all these institutions. Problem is, if the people at the top are so corrupt that they control the levers, so much so that, and I know I'm jumping around a tiny bit here, but it all falls back to January the 6th of 2017. You know, and it's a shocker that the more recent January 6th is the only thing that anyone talks about. But on January the 6th is when we cut off our oversight of the internet, right? So
right, that's right when we gave ICANN away.
Yeah. And of course, it's very damning because that's super important. If you cannot, if you don't have checks and balances, you're in the same place you are with the Federal Reserve. And the company in the same year, Warburg Pincus, is controlling Telcordia Technologies, CrowdStrike, and Neustar, right? So from an intellectual property perspective, for an international firm that operates in every country, like that's a very big deal.
Can you tie together CrowdStrike and Telcordia? Why those names are significant?
So Telcordia, the Telcordia cables themselves go back to submarine cables. They tie back to the British, and so that technology, those fiber lines, right? These are the lines that interconnect all the entire world, right?
Right.
So if you own the IP to that, you have the back door. You have the keys in the back door access.
To spy and to listen to communications.
Yeah, to do everything. To
so isn't it interesting, Michael, that Five Eyes, which was started after World War II, was supposed to be the public-facing story of Five Eyes, was that, you know, the United States, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the English-speaking countries were going to share information. Our own CIA is not allowed to spy on Americans. MI5 and 6 in Europe and Great Britain are not allowed to spy on the UK. But isn't it cool how they can just call their mates across the pond and go, hey, can you check out so-and-so for me because I can't do it here? And they share information. Isn't that ultimately what's going on right now?
Yeah, and I'm sure it's very shocking to most people, but if you just break it down to its most basic, what kind of courts, what kind of law do we operate under? And
maritime law.
And English common law, right?
And English common law, correct.
Right. So English common law provides all these protections and privileges to the queen, right? And
not to her serfs.
And at the end of the day, right, it shouldn't be a matter of who to blame, right? It should be a matter of respecting the office of the presidency. It doesn't matter who's sitting in that office. For the entirety of Neustar's contract and Amazon's contracts, literally, our entire presidential office, executive office of the president, office of management and budget, everything tied to the executive office of the president. Now Amazon operates over 7,500 agencies. That includes the FEC, includes the RNC, that includes the DNC. And so if you really think about that, if we don't even respect our own office of the president, why would any other country, right? And
they wouldn't.
Exactly. So we have to change that narrative. And it starts with taking out and directly going after this Telecommunications Act, because this is what interconnects them. It's what allows all of the public-private partnerships to make it one. It's one unit. It's them versus us. And so the only way to pierce that corporate veil is to hit them on all fronts, legally, obviously, lawfully. But you know, you have to be very smart about it. But the contracts literally are laid out top to bottom, and the proof is there. So this fraud has been committed, right? It's not hypothetical. It doesn't matter what Durham charges or doesn't charge, because if they decide to tell you that evidence or that document is privileged, it's not getting accepted into the court of law.
So let's talk about what we know with respect to Neustar and Obama, the CIA, and other intel communities around the world using Neustar, which we now know is the gatekeeper, the connector that allows this. So they sort of allow you to go where you're going to go on the internet as a covert NSA intelligence collecting mechanism. That was exposed during Durham. How?
So the certificate authorities, right, through Jaffe and through public universities at Georgia Tech, right, we're literally given carte blanche access to the business records of the president of the United States, right? His business records at Trump Tower, his business spectrum, his health records in Michigan. That should be the alarm bells ringing all around the world, right? That literally means that our data is up for sale, to the extent of which you have no control over what they're listening in on, what they can sell to someone else. And you think of that from a psychological measure, right? They're nudging you to make purchases commercially all the time. So you just got to take it a little step further and realize, okay, yeah, Snowden brought out all that he said, we're spying on everyone, kind of made it almost like it was a normal thing. But you have to remember, not many people even really mentioned the NSA before that whole scandal took place. So Neustar comes into being literally 1996 through the Telecommunications Act, or so they say. But clearly this was something devised in the background, right? As a corporation that has enabled and allowed for Five Eyes to operate with carte blanche, right? So they abuse the trusted third party aspect of the Fourth Amendment. So going back to January the 17th of 2014, there's an article from the Financial Times that mentions specifically, Obama says, I'm going to move Americans' phone records over to a private company. And then he assigns that task force to John Podesta. So John Podesta heads that up. Included in that is Rodney Jaffe and all these telecommunications companies. So essentially you had, there were a few laws that were trying to be passed through Congress. One was SOPA and PIPA, and you had CISPA and CISA, right? At the end of the day, these are cybersecurity laws that essentially give private institutions endpoint access and carte blanche access to your data. So kind of like when a body is infected with an infectious disease, and so then no one can hear the body, it works the same way with this stupid law that was passed. And so what it allowed was, now CrowdStrike comes in, installs its Falcon 9 servers on, you know, every database under the sun. And if they say that someone hacked our elections, well, now all of, that's why it was never turned over. Right? None of the databases were turned over to the FBI because they couldn't turn them over. Right.
So I want to get to that point, because this is where the story just gets insanely interesting. And we've got to talk about President Trump here for a second, because on October 28th, 2017, President Trump declassified all of the JFK files. Remember that? That was like a big deal and people were all excited. The JFK files were finally declassified. Yet, has anybody actually read all the files, Michael? Have we been able to get our hands on them?
No, and I think it'd be really interesting to find out where those files went and why everyone's suddenly so concerned about the archives, right? Because if the archives records are not the archives records they appear to be, and so that's I think
you're what, talking about the National Archives, the same place that the FBI and the DOJ claimed that President Trump had, you know, classified information at Mar-a-Lago that belonged at NARA, the National Archives Record Administration.
Yeah, and so it's interesting that a lot of that DNS information traces back to Ameritech, and a lot of the time.
And who is Ameritech?
It is a company that split off from AT&T, but then was bought back by AT&T. It's this little musical chairs that AT&T specifically and other telecommunications companies have been doing. But to mention specifically, right? There's one WikiLeaks cable that was essentially telling Obama, hey, here's who you need to put in you know, Citibank. Froman tells Obama, here's who we suggest, right? But of course, every single person gets ticked off and that's exactly his cabinet, right? Well, that email address that Obama had was obama@ameritech. So, you know, that should throw up huge red flags. Like, what is
going on?
Shouldn't
it be a .gov email address?
Should be, but it's not. And so what
I found, nobody's concerned about his emails. I mean, we have this all, we have a 458 page, you know, report on Hillary Clinton's emails that have footnotes like crimes against children and other things. But what about Obama's emails?
Right. Well, that's the thing is with Obama, of course, being tied to Ameritech, that's IP, right? So now you have intellectual property that's a private. So it's not, you can't FOIA it. Well, if you also control the command and control of the DNS structure, because obviously Rodney Jaffe and the other VIPs, which is literally what they use in their inner communications. They use code names. They use initials to hide what they're doing.
Hot dogs.
Exactly. And it's
pizza
really,
parties.
Yeah. Pretty disturbing. But you know, at the end of the day, it's like, this is there. It's out there, right? It's not something that people can't go and verify and read into themselves. So between propriety and intellectual property, between, you know, you had the Anthem, the OPM hack, you had Sony hack, all these things happening through the executive office of the presidency, right? With nobody, right? Nobody being able to say open source, hey, what actually happened here, right? It's just a tale of nonsense, right? These CrowdStrike, these people at CrowdStrike are complete clowns, right? So they're willing to take all this money and lie to the public. They lied about Ukraine in one instance, you know, so they've been doing this for quite some time. And so I would say that there needs to be a civilian branch, right, that operates in a sense open source that allows for humanity to comprehend and understand what's really happening.
That's
instead
right.
of completely lying to our face. So in reality, when you think about the JFK files and you think about JFK's father being the first SEC chairman, dating back to 1933 when the country filed bankruptcy. So we've been in receivership ever since. People
right.
will think that sounds conspiratorial, but you can look it up. You can go to the Library of Congress. You can read the letters.
Fact.
So Yeah, we don't print our own money. We don't control our own gold. We don't control silver. We don't control our own money at all.
No, we use debt instruments. The Federal Reserve note is a debt instrument. It's a promise to pay, and it's not even your note. It belongs to the Federal Reserve.
Right, and so who created the Federal Reserve? Well, it's the birth child of Eric Warburg.
That's right.
And so then Warburg Pincus, yeah, same company. now, of course, not the same exact, but you get my point. It's that family.
Yeah, goes to Neustar. It also included, actually, they had a stint at Lockheed Martin before.
Yeah, and it's funny.
All the same people.
Yeah, and then one of the partnerships, the piece of this Five Eyes agreement, public-private Five Eyes agreement, over to Australia, is through an internet service provider in Melbourne. And what's super interesting is a couple weeks after Obama references ISIS as a JV team, this company is literally owned by Neustar, called the JV Team LLC.
There you go.
Like
they have to tell you what they're going to do. All right, so I want to get to sort of the coup de grace here for this interview, and there's so much more to unpack. I mean, this is a year's worth of information. We're trying to give people a high level look here, but we've all heard about the shadow government, and people just think, oh, that's the deep state. It's, you know, these terms are loosely used. But let's give people a real look at what a shadow government means and how it has operated, because it goes back to Obama and him having a separate email address, the beauobama@ameritech.com. But it also has another email address at nara.gov. What is that about? That's the National Archive Record Association. What does that mean, the Obama Library, at that email address?
So through open source research in the DNS name servers and you know, using Multigo as well as other open source resource tools, you're able to do traces, and the further you probe that email address, it ends up leading back to Obama Library, right, at nara.gov, right? So the Obama Library.
And does President Trump have an email that says, you know, Donald Trump Library at nara.gov or Trump Library?
I hope not, if you think...
What does this mean that he has this actual email address? What's there?
Well, every other president, right, never use a nonprofit to segue their presidential library. So all the archives, right? Everything that who knows what's there? That's the thing, right? Is if we don't get to know as the American people, then what are you the president of?
Right. So January 6, 2017, that is when Obama made a shadow government, the C2.
Command and control. So we lose oversight of the NTIA, which is the apparatus that allows us to have checks and balances on what happens on the internet. So we realistically, very, very soon, and throughout, it makes sense as to why Biden would win in 2020, right? Because you cannot have checks. There's no checks and balances. There's no oversight. So if they have injections and algorithms that are moving the votes, moving tabulations, you know, at speeds that you can't even fathom, right? 8 billion plus calculations a second. This is well, very, very well thought out, right? And so the fact that they use these public universities and public funding, research institutions to bring about this, literal shadow government, it can be operating and you have no idea. So they can circumvent your ability to send an email address for, let's say, FOIA records, right? So I think people should start filing those in person and in the actual location, and also documenting that and making sure specifically that you have some sort of process by which you can show that, hey, I filed this and this is legitimate. Because if you're doing things over the internet, we're at a point now, there's no way that you can verify and truly know that what you're seeing is what you're saying. And I know that sounds out there, but these are the words actually of Admiral Rogers in the 2016 speech that we watched last night. So this is literally looking at data, looking at military information, stuff that's critical infrastructure, and not being able to verify what's what. So the media can sit there and lie to you all day long because it's their job. But not only is it their job, it's what they're incentivized to do as a corporation. So
I want to tie something back here, because, you know, the fact that Obama created a shadow government using a nonprofit at the National Archives Record Association using a NARA.gov email address. He basically moved, from what I understand with my conversations with you, all the data into his and created his own IP. He's basically reclassified the data because he's taken it out of the government control and put it into his own private control.
Well, let's correct one thing.
Declassified the JFK docs, we never saw them because Obama had control of them.
Well, he didn't do it because he's not that smart. So this is something that's been going back a very long time, right?
We've got about a minute and a half left.
Yes. So when he declassifies those documents and they're not there, and then you have all this fuss and drum up because the federal government is all intertwined, I would say that we need to do some more probing and ask some more questions and, do this in an open source way. So you're not trying to hide the answers behind propriety and nonsensical stories.
Michael, there's a lot more work to do because you and I are both of the understanding that the corporate construct has been what's truly evil behind all of this. And we've grown up to think capitalism is awesome. And I do think free market capitalism is great, but we don't really have that right now. And what we have is corporatism, which has become fascism, essentially, that is controlling everything. And we're pretending to be a republic. We're pretending to have free commerce. And frankly, through government regulation and taxation globally, nationally, locally, and municipally speaking, we're not free. You pay off a mortgage, you have property taxes.
It's all a sham, but the beauty of it is we can fix that now with this fraud, right? Pointing it out, showing the people, and explaining it, right? And then that allows us to move forward. It allows people to prosper, a much better world, much improved and and fair elections, our original republic, right?
So. Well, Michael Corey, thank you so much for coming by. We're going to continue to follow up with you. And folks, that is the end for today. Tomorrow, I've got a special report with Frank Zelenko, brother of the late, great Dr. Zev Zelenko. So join us again tomorrow right here on Brighteon.tv for the Zelenko Report. Good day, everybody.